Recovery Radio, KMP3, 1000 Oaks. Listening to the Recovery Radio podcast on KMP3. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will be your host. I gotta tell you, I am in an incredibly good mood today. Just have to tell you that right out of the chute. My wife's had the Hallmark channel on a lot, so we've been watching a lot of Christmas movies, even though it's not yet Thanksgiving, and it really feels like Christmas in my house already. And yeah, it feels good. It does. As a result, I've been drinking a lot of peppermint tea, but not today. Today, I am going old school, straight up black tea from Lipton, just the regular hard stuff. Black tea, nothing fancy. Hopefully, you have a libation of some kind you can be enjoying with me right now. I'm so happy that you're with me, that you're tuned in, that you're listening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Wherever you are in the world, here we are together. I know I've shared it a lot, but I gotta say it again. Thank you for the support. It's growing. The emails from all over the world. It is thrilling to me. And I really appreciate it. If this is helping you in some way, please pass it on. And anyways, I wanted to read an email to you, and I have gotten permission from the author to do so. Hello there. I just wanted to send you a note to thank you. Thank you for starting your podcast and for the Sarcastic Big Book. I'm a recovering alcoholic who has recently relapsed. I had 3.5 years before I did so, so I've been feeling a lot of shame. I've not talked to my sponsor about it yet. I'm married with 2 kids, 2-year-old and 6-year-old boys. And I work full-time, that includes some traveling, so things are quite busy, especially this time of year. I don't look at my relapse as a failure, but rather a bump in the road. It's something I can learn and grow from, but I need to be honest with myself. I'm not necessarily looking for any advice. I just want to be open and honest with another alcoholic. If you do have any words of encouragement or advice, I certainly wouldn't turn a deaf ear. Have a great evening, and thank you again. One day at a time. Man, thank you, Adam. And I wrote back, and I gave him some thoughts, and I did want to share my main thought about it, my main thoughts about it on a show. And the first thing that comes to my mind is this amazing quote from the musician Miles Davis. I'm going to paraphrase it, I think, come pretty close to saying what it is verbatim, but I think about it a lot. This quote I'm about to share, I think about it every time somebody feels they screwed up, myself included. And the quote is, if you hit the wrong note, the next note you play will determine whether or not it was bad. I know I shared on the show about years ago I was working and a woman came in and she was awful, so I was awful back to her, and she was worse and I was worse and she was worse and I was even worse, and it escalated and she stormed out, and I was hitting the wrong note. I hit the wrong note. And I shared about how I made amends to her. Fortunately, she had paid with a check, and I had her phone number, and I called her, and I had this incredible experience on the phone with this woman. And so, all of a sudden, it wasn't a bad song. All of a sudden, it was turned into a beautiful song for both of us. Beautiful song. It changed the song. And if I had not done that, if I had just hit the wrong note and just walked away and left it, the song would have sucked. Been terrible. So, again, if you hit the wrong note, the next note you play will determine whether or not it was bad. That's what that means to me in this context. So back to the letter. It really depends on what you do with it. Relapse is not a part of my story personally, but indirectly it is. I am actually sober because of a man who had initially had 6 years of sobriety, relapsed, didn't know why, decided he was going to make it the best thing that ever happened in his life, and did so, and died with decades of sobriety and having changed the world for me and everyone I've ever known, changed my whole life. His decision to make that the best thing that ever happened in his life caused countless events to happen. So, while relapse is not a part of my own journey yet, I've seen people transform their relapses into incredible things. So, that's something to keep in mind. I know people need us. I believe that. I believe the people in my life need me to be present and good. That's just my opinion. That's what I think. So, anyways, you can email me. I love the emails. You can email me at sarcasticbigbook@gmail.com. The audio version of the Sarcastic Big Book should be out any moment. I'm excited about that. I talked about it a little bit in the last show. I really put on my radio voice in it. Always wanted to be on the radio, and I don't know. I'm doing this instead, and I got to do that. It was fun. Okay. Today, I wanted to talk about a little something called Step 1. And before I do, I want to start by saying that I am surrounded by people, friends and acquaintances, who have an extremely different take on everything I'm about to tell you, and have had an extremely different experience with the first step than what I am about to share. And that is one of the many amazing things about Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and yet at the same time, there can be so many interpretations and so many different experiences and so many ways to reach the same goal, and it's really beautiful. And so I have to start by saying that if your experience is not like what I'm about to share, That's beautiful. I mean, a lot of my friends swear by how they've done the first step, and it's helped them a lot. And it would not have helped me. I'm going to share with you what did help me and how I went through it. So, okay. In the story, he sold himself short. And I don't know what page it's on. It depends on the edition you have. But there is the original six steps. And Bill Wilson elongated the steps to simplify them, really. And so that's my understanding of it. There's people who know more about all that than I do, but my understanding is he elongated them to make it harder for people to wiggle out of them. He wanted to, you know, bulk them up a little bit, but the 12 steps we have are based on these six steps. And the original step one, are you ready for this? The original step one was this. Step one, complete deflation. That's it. And I always wonder if that were still the first step, how differently, and what will we do with that today? What will we do? How would we take people through step one? How would you take somebody through complete deflation? It was just called complete deflation. And so in my mind, anything more complicated than the first six steps is something must not be right to me. That's just me. But I did the first step. I had complete deflation. And if you've ever had complete deflation, you know what that is. I mean, I was out of ideas. I shared about the spiritual experience that I had in an episode, and achieving complete deflation was doubtless a huge part of that, why that happened. I was humble for a minute or two in my life at that time, on that day, in that moment. And it caused this incredible spiritual experience to happen. And it came as the result of complete deflation. I was out of ideas. I wasn't going to argue. I wasn't going to resist. In this moment, I was just wide open and something happened. So, anyways. And now it's step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. So my understanding of this is as follows. The big book covers step one in the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. There's a solution, more about alcoholism. It really talks about alcoholism. It doesn't tell us specifically how to do step one. In fact, the clear-cut directions don't start until the chapter How It Works, when they start using italics specifically. This was step three. We were at step three. Or, you know, it starts to do that. How It Works starts with step three. It does not say How It Works, and then step one, do this. It's not in the book. What the big book does is it spends all those chapters I mentioned describing alcoholism, describing their understanding of alcoholism. And really what it comes down to is a couple things. Do you understand that as an alcoholic, the most powerful desire to stop drinking will eventually not work? You will be unable to stop drinking on the basis of your own willpower. You'll be unable to stop drinking with self-knowledge. Meaning, you can know how bad it will be if you drink again. You can know what you will lose if you drink again. You can know. You can understand completely the risk, and you can completely understand the ramifications, and you can completely grasp everything there is to grasp. You can know the full extent of your alcoholism, and it will not be enough to permanently keep you sober. This is the point, to my understanding, the book drives home over and over and over and over and over again up until how it works. It's just, they really try to make sure we understand this. Do you get it? We're not sure. We're going to tell you a story. Do you get it now? We don't believe you. Here's another story. Do you understand now? Here's a story about a guy who went to the best shrink on the planet Earth, who told him he was fucked. Do you get it now? We're not sure. Here's another illustration. How about now? Do you get it? No. Actually, we're gonna talk about it in the next chapter again, because we just want to drive it home so you really understand that if you are an alcoholic like we are, self-knowledge about your alcoholism will not keep you sober permanently. And that's why play the tape through or remember your last drunk isn't the answer permanently. Might help here and there, but according to the big book, that's not the answer. Otherwise, we would just remember how bad it was and that would be the end of it. Why would I need to do anything else? Why would I need to go to meetings? Why would I need to do the steps? I'll just remember how bad it was, and that'll be enough. Talks about that. The other thing is, they say, there's a physical component to this. Do you also understand that you have this physical allergy of sorts that is permanent and it's progressive? You can never safely drink again. Do you understand that? And, you know, it says we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. My understanding of this is very different than, like I said, a lot of my friends. I know there's unmanageability. People write about their sober unmanageability and sober, unmanageable with sober, unmanageable with drinking. I get it. I completely get it. I've been absorbed in it. I've talked to people about it, hundreds, probably thousands of times now. I get it. I completely get it. I need God. I know that I need God. But that being said, I don't think that's what that sentence is talking about at all. I think it's saying, if I went to a car dealership and I picked out a car and it was a perfect car and I loved everything about it, and then the car dealer said, there's one thing about this car. It loses its brakes sometimes. Well, how often does it lose its brakes? Well, it varies. Well, how often does it lose its brakes on average? I don't know, 10% of the time. But 90% of the time, this car is drivable. So other than that, it's perfect. I mean, the other 90% of the time, it is just the dream car. But there's just that thing, 10% of the time, you know, that's it. Is that a drivable car? And my understanding of all the first chapters of the book and step one is that it's saying this. It's saying that if you are an alcoholic because of those things I mentioned, the utter inability to leave it alone and the physical allergy that takes over once we start, we're kind of like a car that sometimes loses its brakes. A practicing alcoholic is like a car that sometimes loses its brakes. And when that car is deemed undrivable is subjective and personal. Some people will wait until there's never brakes, and that's not even enough. And in this analogy, you know, undrivable and unmanageable are the same thing. I hope this is making sense. We always think we can see someone hit their bottom, like it's something you can see, like it's external. Well, you know, this guy's 10 DUIs. I mean, you know, he has no brakes ever. He has brakes like 10% of the time. This has got to be the end. This has got to be complete deflation. This has got to be step one. He's got to see this. And some people, they get one DUI and that's unmanageable. That's an undrivable car. That's an unmanageable life. It is so personal. And it's so different for everyone when someone reaches that point where they decide their life is unmanageable. But my understanding of that sentence is we're powerless over alcohol, and then the long line, I forget what that's called, it's a continuation of the thought. It's not a new thought. Their lives have become unmanageable as a result of the drinking. My experience was, and this sounds really cliche and trite, but this was my experience. I was draining a bathtub. I was sober for hours. I was draining a bathtub, and I was watching this water go down this drain. It was cold water. The bath was drawn for me, but I never got in it. And I was standing there watching this water swirl around, go down the drain, and I'm looking at it thinking, that's my life, that's life. And as I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, I can't live life with alcohol, and I cannot live life without alcohol. And when I told my sponsor that the first time I met him, that was what he said was the moment where I did step one. He said, you admitted to your innermost self that you're alcoholic right there. And that made sense to me. And then we talked about step two. I have a lot of conversations with people who are you know, they're just having a really hard time and they've been around for a while, and I'll say, you know, what's going on with the steps? And they'll say, I'm on step one. And I'll say, do you think you're an alcoholic? And they'll say, oh yeah, yeah, of course. Oh no, no, no doubt about it. I've always known that. Of course I'm an alcoholic. And I'm thinking, I don't understand. I mean, I do understand. I know they have an assignment and they're not know what the assignment, but I just want to, you know, to me, they've fulfilled the requirement of step one to me and to my sponsor. When you know you're an alcoholic and you admit to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic, you can never safely drink again. And you cannot stay stopped with your own mental resources, then boom, get up to step two. That's how it was explained to me. And that helped me. I needed it to be that simple. Again, if I was going to be handed homework assignments, I would have told you to go fuck yourself. I just wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have done it. Couldn't have done it. And furthermore, it would have set me off on a path that would have been, I think, hard to shake. Thinking that my life was always going to be unmanageable. And again, I get it. You need God. I need God. No question. Just something about the way that is verbalized would have just set me on the wrong mental track. But that's me. And, the other thing is powerless. The first 164 pages, to my understanding, uses the word powerless one time. And it is in step one. We are powerless over alcohol. And that's it. And I do understand why people say I'm powerless over people, places, and things, but I just don't think that's true. Going back to the story I was telling, while I don't personally believe it was power for me, it was my power, I don't believe that. But, step three says when we sincerely did step three, new power flows in. We have access to power. And I'm just thinking, when I hear somebody say, I'm powerless over everything, or people, places, and things, I'm thinking, I could make your day harder. I could make your day less challenging. Or more challenging. Sometimes, there's lots of high-speed police pursuits where I am, every time I see one, I always think, he's not powerless over people, places, and things. He is exerting so much. He has the power to completely change thousands of people's plans today. The driver of this car. I know in my... Do you understand what I'm saying? I can make my wife's life easier. I can make it more difficult. I just, to me, step one does not involve that. It involves being powerless over alcohol. Remembering my last drunk will not keep me sober permanently. It could for a while. There's stories in the big book where it does for sometimes years, but if you're an alcoholic, the way the founders describe, self-knowledge concerning my alcoholism will not keep me sober. I'm powerless over alcohol. And I'm powerless over what happens. Not only am I powerless over whether or not I pick it up, but I'm powerless over what happens once I do. And that's scary. So my defense must come from a higher power. From a higher power. It's not an intellectual solution. So, that is my understanding. And again, I have to go back to, because I'm just surrounded by people who write their step ones. They write them. They write about it. And it's helped people. I know that helps people. And that just wasn't my experience. It's not my understanding. And, I had to pass that on. So, as we talk about that more, maybe we'll move on to step two next time. Maybe we'll talk about practicing these principles in all our affairs next time. That sounds good to me. Next. But I don't know. I might change my mind. I'm not sure. Anyways, I think that's it for the day. But I'm super glad you tuned in. It means a lot to me. And hope you're having an awesome day. day. Make it awesome. I'm going to go try to live a life that was worth saving. And I hope you do the same.